This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. Our guest this morning is John Raymer, Executive Director of the Compassionate Action Network, a network of self-organizing groups who share a common vision for a compassionate world. John Raymer is here today to speak about the Charter for Compassion, which was launched on November the 12th. Welcome, John.
Hi, Diane. Thanks for having me.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about the Compassionate Action Network?
Yes. Well, we're a network to start with, which is a new concept, even though the word's been around a long time. In that, true that there's an executive director, but in a network, as you know, the power is not centralized and it's not decentralized, but it's distributed. In other words, everyone who's a member of the network is the center of the network. So we're a network of self-organizing groups. And groups are here focused on different topics and areas of compassion and actually of compassionate action. So the idea is about awakening compassion in ourselves, our children, and the world. This grew out of the visit of His Holiness the Dalai Lama to Seattle. And a number of us who participated in that event said that the community would benefit from having a way to stay connected, having a way to support each other's activities and make the work of compassion and compassionate action something that we can do together. So that is what led to the birth of the Compassionate Action Network, which meets twice a year, once in October, once in April. We have a harvest in October and a renewal in April, like the Seeds of Compassion was in April of 2008. And we have a social network, which is a big part of how people are organizing and staying connected these days.
Would you say a few words about some of the specific groups that are involved and give some examples?
Yeah, well, one is interspiritual. So for a number of years, groups here in Seattle have been working on interfaith dialogue. So interfaith, interspiritual is one of the groups on there. There's a group that's called Beloved Communities that Mark Jones hosts, which is a fabulous group of folks working on sustainability issues who are come to the Beloved Communities group and workshop their proposals. So the idea there is to be net providers, actually people working on initiatives here to give back into the grid, not just consuming stuff, but what can we contribute back in. There's a group called Call to Caring, which came the Seattle Human Services Coalition. Julia Sterkovsky convened this group. This is many human service provider agencies, and you know there is challenging times right now with our budget, who are coming together to give and declare a call to caring. There are a lot of people who are underemployed right now who could be involved and engaged in doing things. So this is an example of another group that's on the site. And there are many. There are 27 different groups on there. Education is a key area. Mindful parenting is a key area. I mean, compassion is and should be a part of everything that we do, so therefore the groups are very diverse.
What is your definition of compassion?
Oh, gosh. I don't know that I have a single definition. I know that it starts from within. So compassion, and one of the expressions in the Charter that says it beautifully is about dethroning ourselves from the center of the world. So for me, compassion is like in community, like in communication. There's the with the other part of compassion, which is key. I am also passionate about what I'm doing, and I think that's another dimension to compassion. So awakening, this idea of remembering and awakening that there's more than just myself in every moment. There's other considerations to be recognized. There's ancient spirits to be considered and honored as well. So compassion really, it affects the choices that one makes and the choices that I make. And I try to do it as mindfully, as open-minded, and as willing to be as present as I can here in this moment to make a difference with the time that we have.
Let's speak now about the Charter for Compassion. Why was the Charter for Compassion created? What's the purpose?
Well, the way this happened, this is a perfect example of the networking capabilities that's going on. For a number of years, there's a project called TED, the Technology Education and Design Prize, the TED Prize, highly coveted, and it's a beautiful example of how the technology can spread ideas. These are convened and set up as a way to let the best ideas in the world spread. So one of the visitors to the TED Prize who gave a TED talk is Karen Armstrong, a very well-known author from the UK who's written many books on religion, who's really recognized as one of the leading experts on religiosity and how the different comparative religions relate to each other, and this has been her life's work. So she came and gave a talk that was a very inspiring talk, and she won the TED Prize. Now, winners of the TED Prize are given $100,000, but more importantly, or more interestingly, they're given one wish to change the world. like Bono was a winner of the TED Prize, many others too, three people every year. Well, her wish, Karen Armstrong's, was very elegant and simple. She says, I want to implement the golden rule globally. That she sees that expression as something that's central to all spiritual teachings, ethical teachings, and religious teachings. So the way the TED Prize works is they say, okay, we're going to help grant you your wish. And over the last year, over 150,000 people from over 180 countries contributed online to help write for the world a charter for compassion. And just a few weeks ago, November 12th, was the launch of the Charter for Compassion globally. And His Holiness the Dalai Lama signed it, and Archbishop Desmond Tutu signed it, and Paul Simon signed it, and thousands of people. And hopefully people who are listening to the show will go to charterforcompassion.org or compassionateactionnetwork.com and link to and affirm the charter. So the story is a good example of how we can use the power of networks to spread the word. And in this case, the word is compassion. And the idea of having a charter for compassion for our times so we can come together and recognize that we can connect through our similarities and innovate through our diversities. And in doing so, diversity can become a source of strength, but not something that keeps us apart. And we focus on our differences way too much. And here's an example that really shows what unites and binds us together.
Would you say more about the process that was used to create the charter and also something about the geographical distribution of the people who were involved?
Yes. Okay. So it was 180 countries, I believe. And of course, the web is the way you use this. And it's not just a web that you go and read this stuff, but you interact and write. So there was a writing process. And a council of conscience was convened of many different faiths and traditions. Then in February of 2009, there was gatherings in Switzerland, which I think is a wise choice, you know, trying to do this with authority and credibility. And in Switzerland, they actually put the words together, and it must have been a painful process. I've been in a few of these group editing discussions. And representatives of the world through this Council of Conscience in Switzerland in February completed the draft of the charter, and it got it down to four paragraphs. I mean, that's pretty good. And again, of course, it's just words, but yet words do matter. And I myself go to it and am learning from it. And I think, you know, anyone who checks it out will find that there's much to think about there. But the idea is to have the charter be an expression of compassion that we can affirm and then, of course, influence our actions as a result of it. So the process was an open, transparent process, which is key to the way in an open source world, creative commons. This is not trademarked by anybody. People are trying to express the will of the world right now to find a more compassionate pathway for all of us.
I'm Diane Horn, and we are speaking with John Raymer, Executive Director of the Compassionate Action Network. Our topic is the Charter for Compassion. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Before we specifically talk about what is stated in the Charter, what are the underlying principles of the Charter for Compassion?
The one thing I thought that was very powerful was this notion that it's at the heart of all religious, ethical, and spiritual traditions. A lot of us are confused about religion in that, on one hand, you would think it would be a great way of being compassionate in the world, but yet so much of the violence in the world is religiously motivated. And how can we kill in the name of God? It's just, these are core questions that we've been grappling with. So there's a whole group of people that maybe see sustainability and understand its importance, but don't consider themselves religious. Maybe they consider themselves spiritual. And a lot of religious leaders wonder about what people see as the difference. I think the institutional aspect of religion is what turns a lot of people off. And then even those people who don't see themselves as spiritual or religious, but understand there's some moral ethics that guide us. So when they framed it, the principles that govern it are all of those, you know, religious, ethical, and spiritual traditions. So many of us are awakening to each other's paths and realizing the similarities between them. So that the governing principles here were that for all of us, that we want to treat others as we want to be treated ourselves. That is the golden rule. And if we try to boil it all down, and many traditions have, you know, what is the essence of the whole thing? There you go. If I only treat you in the way I want to be treated, And let's be clear, we don't do that yet. So that's not such an obvious thing. For some of us it may be, but it isn't for all of us. So the charter is intended as an underlying principle is to exercise, illuminate, inspire people to behave within the golden rule.
What does the Charter for Compassion say? What is stated in the charter?
It's four paragraphs, and it starts with the principles of compassion. I love this notion of dethroning ourselves. It says, compassion impels us to work tirelessly to alleviate the suffering of our fellow creatures, of course, creatures here, meaning more than just people, to dethrone ourselves from the center of our world and put another there. That is a step in the right direction. I know for myself is that sometimes we're so self-absorbed that we don't even realize the implications we're having on others. And it says, and to honor the inviolable sanctity of every single human being, treating everybody without exception with absolute justice, equity, and respect. And there you go. That three is not trivial. Equity and respect and justice. I realize that equity isn't the same as equality. It's a very powerful notion that we're not all equal. For whatever reason, that's the way it is. But we can all be given equal opportunity. Equity gives us and grants each that opportunity to fulfill their own potential. So I love this notion about, there you go, justice, equity, and respect is the starting point for how you treat people. That's in the first paragraph. And then, of course, it says here to act or speak violently out of spite, chauvinism, or self-interest. So it says it's necessary to, in both public and private life, to refrain consistently, emphatically from inflicting pain. And just in my everyday life, my brother and I, we joke, are you trying to give me pain there? You know, the pain doesn't just have to mean physical pain. It's really in our intentionality with each other. To act or speak violently out of spite, chauvinism, or self-interest, to impoverish, exploit, or deny basic rights to anybody, and to incite hatred by denigrating others, even our enemies, is a denial of our common humanity. So the notion that we can actually think different about who we call the enemy is very powerful. We can see in our own country's history the challenges we're faced about what is it to treat ethically and what is it to treat responsibly those who we call our enemies, and how do we as a people identify who we are and how we put compassion again here at the center. You can see the shift that starts to happen. It says we acknowledge that we have failed to live compassionately, and some have even increased the sum of human misery in the name of religion. I think that's a very healthy kind of confession, that in the name of religion, we have done some very painful things. So this is trying to be respectful and at the same time trying to really be powerful in revealing some of the truths that maybe haven't been said that need to be honored. So that's the second paragraph. And then it is a call. So we therefore call upon all men and women to restore compassion to the center of morality and religion, to return to the ancient principle that any interpretation of Scripture that breeds violence, hatred, or disdain is illegitimate. There you go. And we see this in so many examples where one's interpretation of Scripture versus another leads to totally different views of what's acceptable and not acceptable. So the thought that any Scripture that breeds violence, hatred, or disdain is illegitimate. That's another powerful idea, and that's in the third paragraph, and it goes on. But the last paragraph here, we can jump to, is that we urgently need to make compassion a clear, luminous, and dynamic force in our polarized world, rooted in a principled determination to transcend, here it is, selfishness. Compassion can break down political, dogmatic, ideological, and religious boundaries. Born of our deep interdependence, i.e. sustainability here, compassion is essential to human relationships and to a fulfilled humanity. It is the path to enlightenment and indispensable in the creation of a just economy and a peaceful global community. So, again, words are words. They do matter. It's not enough, but at least it's an expression that the world can point to as its own and say, okay, we at this time, realizing the challenges we face, who know that, as the indigenous leaders say, we're either going to make these changes by force or by will. And if we could will the change, it would probably be a better outcome for a lot of people. But we shall see. I mean, this is why this is such an interesting moment to be alive, and this is such, I think, a great example of what we're capable of as of humanity.
Would you elaborate on the ways in which the Charter for Compassion can instruct the dialogues or discussions we have with one another?
Seattle should be proud. Here's a good example. On the Compassionate Action Network, we for years have been supporting and working with three, they're known as the Interfaith Amigos. I don't know if you heard about this, Diane, but you know them as individuals. This is Rabbi Ted Falcon, and Sheikh Jamal Rahman, and Don McKenzie. So after 9/11, a number of us got together to say we better be talking to the Muslim community and start to understand better what's going on there. So the New York Times just this past week had a feature story in the national section about our own Interfaith Amigos. And one of the incredible things that they do, and this is part of their creative expression of interfaith dialogue, is they stand up and share not only the truths that they most respect about their own particular paths, but the untruths that they see. And it's a very, very powerful idea. And this is part of where I think compassion sets in, is where we have to have compassion for our own understandings of things and recognizing that maybe that our traditions or faiths or religions say things that we don't necessarily agree with. It was powerful for Rabbi Falcon, and I'm Jewish, and Rabbi Falcon shared that for him, the chosen people has created enormous, he doesn't see that. For Jamal Rahman, he saw the verses that suggest we should kill the enemy as being absolutely not consistent with other teachings, even just in the paragraph before. So part of the work that's going on here is deep work in which we're recognizing that we're all flawed in a certain way, and we may not have the perfect answers in all our traditions, and we need to transcend some of our own dogma to think differently in light of the challenges we face.
You are listening to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is John Raymer, Executive Director of the Compassionate Action Network. Our topic is the Charter for Compassion. Would you now tell us about the November 12th launch of the Charter for Compassion
and the various
events that took place worldwide and also here in Seattle?
So Reverend Jean, who's a member of the Compassionate Action Network, Buddhist monk, who is an amazing young woman who is working with us, she organized an event at St. Pat's Church up on Roanoke here in Seattle. And I'm proud to say there were more events launching the Charter for Compassion in Seattle than any other site. If you go onto the Charter for Compassion site, you can see those events that happened. So many people were engaged in coming in a public reading of the Charter. We also have, and through the Compassion Action Network, you can find the work of Andrea Cohn and Susan Partnow on the Compassionate Listening Project. Leah Green started this initiative with Arab and Israeli being able to sit and talk with each other. They were there as well. So Andrea was there representing Compassionate Listening Project. So in addition to at the church, a reading of the Charter for Compassion, and there's a short YouTube clip that we shared that's also on the site that you can see it being read in different ways. People actually engage with each other and experience compassionate listening, which is a whole other practice, obviously directly linked to what we're talking about. So that night was a night in which the charter was launched. Karen Armstrong was at the press club in Washington, D.C., and there were activities all over the world. And on the site, the charterforcompassionsite.org, you can link to and see, for instance, right in a few days, down in Melbourne, Australia, is the Council for a Parliament of World Religions. This is the largest interfaith gathering on earth. It's been happening since 1890s. And Karen Armstrong and many others will participate there, and the charter, again, will be shared during the Council for a Parliament of World Religions. And Seattle is a partner city involved with that through the Compassionate Action Network. So there was a lot going on that day. And, of course, when we gather, we know that it's not just about presenting, it's actually experiencing. So the attendees had a chance to engage in each other with compassionate listening, like I mentioned.
What actions have been taken so far to help enact the Charter for Compassion following the launch?
Well, a lot of work was already happening. We knew a year ago that this was coming. And my gosh, the work of compassion has been going on for thousands of years, thank God. So some of the things that I mentioned before, and I think that if I didn't emphasize, I should, is that here in our community, there's a call to caring. For instance, Rhianne Eisler wrote a book on the real wealth of nations. And there was a group here, and they're on the CompassionateActionNetwork.com site, that's on the real wealth of nations. People have been trained to make presentations in the community, much like was done with Al Gore's book and his PowerPoint presentation on climate change. that a presentation has been put together, people have been trained to go out and present to the community about the real wealth of nations. The idea that there's a human economy that has huge value that isn't recognized, all the caring that is done. So there's going to be presentations throughout the next year. Each person who is trained committed to make 10 of these presentations. Again, there are a lot of people right now rethinking. We're at one of those moments of a values clarification to have to choose what's really important for us. So the call to caring I mentioned before is another example. This is where human service providers are coping with huge budget challenges that we're facing and the potential of actually closing down services and food banks being so full right now. So the idea of acting compassionately and taking some of your time that you might have put to one of your own things and thinking about putting some time to someone else's thing and helping out in the community. These are the kind of examples of actions that are going on. And you can see a ton of them on the Compassionate Action Network.
Would you like to focus on some of the activities that are specifically going to be going on in Seattle to follow up on the Charter or Compassion Lodge?
Yeah. Well, we just had one, the 23rd Annual Interfaith Praise and Thanksgiving. And we will have at the end of the year on the 31st at Green Lake. There's been for a number of years now a peace walk that happens in the early afternoon or mid-afternoon. I think it starts around 3:30, 4 o'clock. You should check on the site. And that's kind of be a culmination of 50 days from when the launch of the charter. So there are a calendar of events on the site. There is Compassionate Listening is having its own workshops and presentations. There's musical expressions of compassion happening in the community. So the end event that I'm emphasizing is the one that'll be at Green Lake on New Year's Eve, which is with a candle, arrive there, there'll be music. People will have come back from the Parliament for World Religion, so there's going to be some kind of press event there as well that night in the community house to spread the word about the work of the Charter for Compassion and the activities that are happening in our region.
You alluded to this a bit earlier, but could you say more about who is supporting the Charter for Compassion and who has signed on?
Well, you know, fortunately, we've got some inspiring musicians and artists in the world that realize important. So Bono and Paul Simon and James Taylor, I mean, the list goes on there. And of course, Desmond Tutu is just an incredible expression of compassion in his life. He's signed on there, as is His Holiness the Dalai Lama. There's, I think, as of this morning when I looked, maybe 50,000 people have signed on. The word is spreading. So go there. You can see all the names and add your name because it is a collection of the voice of the world expressing its affirmation for Charter of Compassion.
Overall, how would you characterize the response to the Charter so far?
I don't know. I mean, let me say for me, for instance, Thursday night, I'll be at the Seattle University. There were young people who came there who were having a spirituality. And they asked to come, this is at Seattle U, to have a dialogue about the Charter for Compassion. So every time I've talked about it publicly, people have come up and then encouraged either more of what they saw or invited me to get involved or others to get involved. So it's been a positive. I think it's new. I mean, the idea of how you relate to a charter. And it's hard to say, again, because of the network of this, except I have looked at the news from time to time. I go to Google News and Charter for Compassion, and there's been a ton written about it. CNN, there were stories about it. So, you know, with all the other news going on, I don't hear a lot on the mainstream often, but you can find a ton about it on the web. And I think many people are involved in looking for those examples and expressions of it right now, and I encourage our listeners to come up with their own and share it. That's the whole point.
What do you see as the path to persuading those who are involved in violent conflict to adopt the Charter for Compassion?
Well, what's most effective I've seen is actually breaking the grip of our own positions on things. I mean, in dialogue with other people, where you're really talking to people who have different points of view than you do. And Velcro Ripper is a filmmaker. Fierce Light was his film that he's done. He did Scared Sacred as well. Remarkable filmmaker. And in a workshop with Velcro, he had us do a couple of rounds, in which the first round we talked about what we cared about. And then in the second round, we had to talk about the opposing positions to what we cared about and how you would take that position to argue against your point of view. And I noticed how I demonize in my own way, make derogatory anyone who disagrees with me, and to actually try to take the opposing point of view and honorably represent it. When that happened, I saw a shift in myself. That's the kind of quiet little shift inside that gets us beyond that righteousness that keeps us so closed and can lead us to doing these violent acts because we think we're right about something and therefore justified. I mean, it's amazing people are blowing themselves up like that. You got to say, what is going on there? And that's where compassion is important, to try to really understand what's at the root and what's motivating that kind of violence as an expression of one's beliefs. That's got to change. And we've got to understand that better and engage there in order to move that forward. We cannot let that continue.
What are some resources for listeners who would like to help enact the Charter for Compassion?
Well, social networks. Of course, you know, this is the game right now. So not only is the charterforcompassion.org a website you can go to, and there you can get the videos and you can get the actual charter and all the different languages, etc. The Compassionate Action Network is a deep social network, and we use that to differentiate it. So it's not just for friending and making connections, although that's an important part. You can interact. But really, we want to encourage action and create a space for action. So the idea of the Compassionate Action Network invites people to come and post their events. If there's events that you're doing you want to share with the community, there's over 1,000 members who are on the site. You can join the groups that are on there that we talked about here. I mean, basically, it's time to get involved at another level. And using these networks, in fact, I've been fortunate enough to work all over the world. We're building these deep social networks in Southeast Asia with youth that are working in the Philippines, working in Thailand. Surprisingly so, Southeast Asia is way ahead in the use of social networks. We think, of course, again, with our self-centered point of view, that America is the center of the world. But in the global space now with these networks, they're happening all over. So we've been working with child rights practitioners. The, of course, incredible resource, another project we've been involved with is called Wiser Earth, which is a community directory of all the groups that are working for just and lasting change in the world. That's wiserearth.org. So I'm a big advocate of using these tools. I mean, there's no substitute for face-to-face. But there's no excuse not to, at the same time, get involved by getting connected. And fortunately, the digital divide is going away in a lot of places. We've been working with ethnic minorities and indigenous people who now have access and can, through the internet, have a voice. And in that way, it's a very exciting time to see the world in a network. More than half the people on the planet have cell phones. This is an incredible way for us as a world to find itself connected at a time that we really need to be organized and come together in some new expression of cooperation and compassion.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Get involved. Don't hold back. That wherever we are in the life cycle, there's the next generation to be looking to, and a recognition that to whom much has been given, much is expected. And compassion is a beautiful way, I think, to find a unity, a prior unity that we all share. And don't hesitate. The world is waiting.
Well, thanks so much for being here, John.
You're welcome. Thanks, Diane.
We have just been speaking with John Raymer, Executive Director of the Compassionate Action Network, about the Charter for Compassion. For more information, check on the web at www.charterforcompassion.org and also www.compassionateactionnetwork.com. Again, that's charterforcompassion.org and compassionateactionnetwork.com. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, selected sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on podcasting, and scroll down to Mind Over Matters sustainability segment. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.